The Major Spoilers podcast covers news, reviews, and of course, spoilers, and goes into details about the topics discussed. So if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items we talk about, you might want to come back later.
I'm Matthew.
I'm Rodrigo.
And I'm Steven, and you're listening to the Major Spoilers podcast, the podcast for pop culture and comic fans.
In this issue, we got alternate Earths, Targets on vacation, Zdarsky's Batman, and a brand new Sorcerer Supreme. Plus, what do you get when you take four turtles, a bat, five robins, and a brain in a jar? We don't know either, but we're going to review it for you tonight. Batman, turtles, Splinter, Banefence, it's all going down under the streets of Gotham. So get the atomic batteries to power and cut them no slack, because the Major Spoilers podcast is on the air.
Welcome to issue 966 of the Major Spoilers podcast. Thank you so much for downloading and listening to us this week. And if this is your first time, welcome. We hope you find some good information. We hope that you find some good entertainment and maybe some recommendations for comics to read. We're going to start things off with some news. We're going to take a look at one of the best comics of 2021. It's taking a break. DC Comics has announced that The Human Target from Tom King and Greg Smallwood will take a five-month break following the release of issue 6 of the series, which comes out in a few weeks. The Human Target tells the tale of Christopher Chance, who has to solve his own murder before the poison in his system kills him. With only 6 days left to live, fans are going to have to wait a little bit longer to see if Ice is the culprit or if it's someone else. Human Target number 7 is expected to resume publishing on September 20th, 2022.
Didn't you say there was a show for this?
Somebody was talking about there was a live action show of The Human Target, what, like 10 years ago, 15 years ago, something like that?
There were actually two. There was one in the 90s, right about the same time as The Flash, or a little after, from Bilson and DeMeo. And then there was another one, I want to say, in 2008 or so.
Wow.
Yeah, but it's one of those DC properties that really doesn't have any built-in superhero component, so you can do it for pretty much for free. I think that on the one hand, I appreciate them saying, here's the break we're going to take to make sure that, you know, we can do the back half with as much quality as we did the first half. But then I also say to myself, hey, editorial, maybe the time to get ahead on this was before you launched the series. And so I don't necessarily want to be one of those guys where you're like, oh, they're just breaking and it's stupid and dumb and
Well, the
because
problem
I,
with
you know, I understand
the,
that
but. The problem with taking extended breaks is that it's very easy for people to forget about it. And when you're talking about a 5 month break, that's 5 months where people are going to completely forget about this series. So that is something to be concerned about.
I cannot say,
and DC has not come out to say why the reason is for the break. I mean, they certainly say, hey, by the way, Tom King's got a new Black Label series launching, you know, next week or something that's going to launch that's going to run for 2 years. But they haven't said if it is an issue with Greg Smallwood, which I don't think it's an issue with Greg Smallwood, because if you follow him on Twitter and Instagram, he's been posting some really amazing behind the scenes tutorial breakdowns of how he does the issues. And all of that coloring stuff is all being done with like specialty brushes and stuff in, I think it's Photoshop is what he's using. And so it looks like he's able to blow through a lot of this stuff fairly quickly. So I'm not really certain why they're taking a break. I just know that I hope that they have a good, you know, volume one trade paperback coming up a month and a half after the issue number 6 releases, to kind of keep people remembering that this series is out there. Because, yes, I will be excited when the series returns in September. But I'm going to have to sit there and go, okay, now what happened before? And probably have to go back and reread everything. So that's a problem when you have a break. Now, you know, I don't know what's going on in people's personal lives. Maybe there's a reason why they had to take a break.
Sure.
So I don't think I can say, well, you guys should have had all 12 of these issues done before you even released the first issue. I don't think that's the right approach to that.
Well, and there's also, you know, you come to the question of Saga recently came back from like a three-year hiatus.
Three and a half, 4 years,
An extended hiatus. And I was a huge, huge Saga fan in those, you know, those first two arcs. And I kind of fell away in the 50s. And when the book came back, I'm like, Saga, that's, oh, right. And I'm just like trying to get back into it. And I picked up the first issue back and I did not feel the same magic that I did when, you know, the first 12 issues of Saga came out. And you know, it's 50 issues in. That might have happened anyway without a break. But I wonder how many people are having a similar thing and thinking that, you know, the hiatus is the problem. Mm. You know?
No, I can see that. I think in the case of Human Target, though, because this is a closed series, you know, mini series or a limited series, and Saga is open-ended and ongoing. I think, you know, having an extendo break like that on Saga may, I mean, I see where you're totally coming from and you're totally right. But I also think that that may be a little different than a limited series where, hey, we're coming back after, you know, sure, hey, we gave you the first half of the season. Now we're in our mid-season hiatus. We'll come back and wrap this up, you know, in our next season and tell the whole story. I can kind of see it doing that, but I don't like it when, like we talked about last week on the show, when Netflix does it with their shows. I don't like, you know, getting four episodes of Doctor Who, and then we have to wait 2 years for another Doctor Who season to appear. So, you know.
Well, and not only that, but the things in between that break are supposed to be part of the same season, right? It's not like you're getting if you get four episodes and then four episodes a year later, you're not getting a four-episode season and then another four-episode season. You're getting an eight-episode season split in between two things.
Exactly. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, we'll see if this survives. I'll be interested to see how the numbers go in the future. We'll have to see when that comes back in, like, October, November, see how well that series does.
Yep. And, you know, speaking of publishing, Vault Comics has announced that they're actually going to be publishing comics and then distributing them through Lunar Distributors as another outlet for their titles beginning in May of this year, 2022. Lunar Distribution, you may recall, began distributing their comics, or began distributing comics, rather, when Diamond had to shut down during the COVID-19 pandemic in 2020. Now, according to Vault, it's going to be the same discounts, the same line-wide returnability, and the same books between Lunar and Diamond Comics distributors. So
good. More distributors, the better.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, back in the old days, I remember
back in the old days of 3 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Back in the old days of 1996, right before the market collapsed, when Marvel's bought Heroes World, I was like, oh, it seems like the comics are not getting to us the same way they did. And it got worse and worse and worse. And, you know, as someone who was in the comic book retail side, forced to deal with, you know, a certain company and having them, you know, just say, hey, sorry, you're not getting any of this. Oh, right. We wrecked that whole box of books. If you send them back at some point, we may have more, but you're not getting any more right now. You know, it comes to a point where I feel like more competition is better, even if it, you know, kind of makes a certain company less, what's the word I'm looking for, of an evil monolith.
All right, let's wrap everything up this week, Rodrigo.
Okay. DC Comics has announced that Chip Zdarsky will be taking on the writing duties of the company's flagship Batman series beginning with issue 125. Did I pronounce the last name right, Zdarsky?
Mm-hmm. That's how I pronounce it, yeah.
Okay. His first story arc will be entitled Failsafe, which will be a six-issue story where Batman has nightmares about the future while an old enemy reemerges from the past with murderous intent. Jorge Jimenez will continue as the artist on the series. Batman number 125 arrives on July 5th, 2022.
You know, if you told me, you know, 6 years ago that Chip Zdarsky was doing Batman, I'd be like, oh, DC, what have you done? What are you thinking? Because Zdarsky tends to, or in the past, has really leaned heavily into sometimes crude humor for a lot of his stuff. And so, you know, 6-7 years ago, I would have been like, oh, I don't know if this is such a good pairing. But now with a lot of the other things that he's worked on, I'm okay with this. Matthew, what do you think?
I actually agree with you, which is relatively rare when it comes to matters of whether or not something is too silly or not. You know, the Zdarsky of Sex Criminals is not the Zdarsky of Howard the Duck, and the Zdarsky of Howard the Duck is not the Zdarsky we've seen on the recent run of Daredevil. So I feel like seeing this creator actually exploring different sides and different, you know, aspects and different tones is great. And seeing him nail flat out comedy and then
relatively crude humor and also, you know, straightforward, dark, brooding adventure stories, you know, in the Daredevil vein. It's cool. I really want Chip's Batman. I don't know if I remember what Jimenez art looks like, but if I don't know, I suppose that's a good thing, because if it had been bad and I looked at it, I would definitely remember the name.
I think it's fairly solid art, to be honest.
Is he doing Batman right now?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Oh, I kind of like that guy.
Yeah. He's currently doing it. So I don't know, you know, a lot of the news that's coming around this, I haven't seen anything that says that he is going to be the new ongoing, because they just had, who was the guy? Now I forgot who the guy was, just currently writing the story that's about to wrap up. He did like 6 issues and then he's out. And so I wonder if Zdarsky's in for 6 issues and then is out, or if, you know, if they're going to start rotating people around on that, or if he's going to be the new ongoing.
That's you know, a good question. I mean, writer. Since right now, Williamson, I believe, is writing it.
Mm-hmm.
And before that, we had Tynion, and before that was after the Tom King run ended. I want to say maybe they're going to start, you know, moving things around and not necessarily having huge 5 and 6 year arcs like, you know, Snyder had coming mm-hmm. out of the New 52. I'm not necessarily sad about that.
Yeah, I'm looking at Zdarsky's Substack right now. He says, for all those asking, yes, this is for the long haul, or at least until DC realizes their mistake. I've been cooking up plans that will be felt through all of the Bat titles, which have an amazing roster of talent on them, and I think readers will be happy. And then he also goes on to say, hey, by the way, anyone asking, yes, I'm also staying on Daredevil. So he will be splitting his duties between both books. So there you go.
Wow, maybe we can get him to bring back DC crossovers and have Batman and Daredevil meet once more.
That would be interesting. Anyway, listeners, you can join the conversation about these stories and more over on our Discord server. You can join our Major Spoilers Discord server absolutely free. Get in there and hang out with all the other cool kids. You can, there's a channel for just about anything. If you want to talk comic books, it's there. RPGs, video games, sports, prose books, television, movies. It's all over there, completely free. There's a link in the show notes. So what are you waiting for? Join our Discord server right now, today. All right. After the news, we do some reviews. So the Ahoy Comics announced, well, they announced it a while ago. I don't know why they tried to make a big deal out of it by putting a whole bunch of embargoes on the title until Monday. But this week, Ahoy Comics announced Gail Simone, Mark Waid, and a whole bunch of other people will be writing a series of the Wrong Earth one-shots. And Gail Simone is first out of the gate this week with the Wrong Earth Trapped on Teen Planet number 1, which looks like a whole lot of Archie comic stuff.
That is actually exactly what it is. Well, at least part of it. The story actually starts with art by Walter Giovanni, who worked with Gail on her run on Red Sonja, or rather their run on Red Sonja, I should say. But once we see, and of course, if you've never read The Wrong Earth, the whole story of The Wrong Earth kind of goes like this. Imagine, if you will, Adam West Batman and Christopher Nolan Batman switched universes. So you have this grim and gritty adventurer of the night in a world where everything is kind of fun and campy. And then, of course, you have the campy adventurer in the dark, grim, dark, murderous world of Earth Omega. The Wrong Earth, Trapped on Teen Planet, takes Dragonfly, the dark and gritty Dragonfly, who is living in the world of Dragonfly Man, which is not so dark and or gritty, and has him encounter another portal between the worlds. But this one, of course, takes him to a world of Sun Valley, which is totally not Riverdale. And traveling with him are his sidekick, Stinger, and someone who I'm almost certain is a Harley Quinn analog. And I'm totally fine with a Harley Quinn analog in a book written by Gail Simone. But her name is Deuce. She has a playing card motif. And Dragonfly Man accidentally gets sucked through a mirror into an alternate reality. But the fun part for me is actually the narrative device, where about 3 pages in, a guy comes up, "Hi, I'm Cappy Comics, the king of captions. I've been doing the lowdown on all our mind-melting magazines since 1957. And of course, Cappy is, you know, a guy in a sailor suit. And he starts narrating the book. And then finally, he's like, "Look, some of the editors say they don't need me anymore. I need this job, okay?" So the narration is being done live by this cartoon character. But the real twist of it, you would think that Christopher Nolan Batman falling into the cartoon world of the Archies would be hateful and angry and grimdark, right? Wrong. Yes. Ola. And I'll tell you why. Yes, thank you, Rodrigo. Dragonfly grew up reading the stories of Sandy and his friends in Sun Valley. Sandy and Bad Girl Dee Dee and America's Sweetheart Debbie, who are part of an endless love triangle, and his best friend Dipstick and his evil friend Perry. And of course, he has a dog who curses a lot. But he loves it because he grew up with these comics and decides he's staying in the Sandy Comics universe. Unfortunately, once you crash into a world, sometimes you bring a little bit of your reality with it. So he ends up being hired by not Veronica Lodge's dad to protect her from what may be an attack by supervillains who are based on the Archie Comics heroes. For me, first of all, I want to tell you, this is a great story. This is a cute book. It's a fun book. And if you are someone, you know, like me, who has this nerdy love of both sides of the equation, there are really, really great moments to be had in here. But probably the best is when Dragonfly realizes, okay, I have to do my thing. I'm not just a vigilante today. I'm a GD mighty hero. And so I kind of enjoy that. And you know, the villain behind the whole thing turns out to be surprising if you don't know Gail Simone. And the end of the story is incredibly satisfying, and it feels like it's true to both the world of a dark and gritty vigilante and, you know, the world of kids having soda pops and hanging out at the chocolate shop. So they can't spell chocolate, but what are you going to do? 4 slices of meatloaf. For the Wrong Planet, Trapped on Teen Planet. It's a one-shot. I'll call it number one. Steven will tell me I'm wrong and say it's just a one-shot. But either way, it's a good book. I do recommend it to you, especially if you used to read Archie Comics when you were in the grocery store line and were just like, man, I wonder what these would be like if Batman showed up.
All right, there you go. Over on the Marvel side of the aisle, this week we have Strange number one from Jed McKay and Marcelo Ferreira. This is kind of the new Doctor Strange series. Many people may remember the Doctor Strange is dead. Then he came back from the dead, and then his past self came to resurrect his dead self, and then they all died. And so there's no Doctor Strange. But before Doctor Strange kicked and left this mortal plane forever, he turned the power of the Sorcerer Supreme over to his wife, Clea. And Clea, of course, is a from another dimension, and she's got the black magics and all that other stuff. So on her first day on the job, Dr. Doom shows up, wants the power of the Sorcerer Supreme. She kicks him to the curb, and then they go, she and Wong go looking for some coffee from the dark dimension down at the Goblin Market, and then a bunch of people show up and try to attack the place and clear them out. But of course, she's like, nope, not going to have any of that stuff. I'm the Sorcerer Supreme. And then she comes to the epic conclusion that, oh, I should be the one that resurrects my dead husband. At which point, all heck break loose, and there's a zombie that shows up at the end of this issue. It's a pretty straightforward story. I like how it's set up. I'm not a huge, I don't know everything about Clea beyond what Ashley Victoria Robinson brings to the character in her renditions with Jason. So, you know, she seems pretty bad. She seems like maybe she shouldn't have the power of the Sorcerer Supreme, because she's more than happy to kill people just for looking at her bad. So it'll be interesting to see how other members of the Marvel Universe come to the conclusion that either Stephen Strange should stay dead or Stephen Strange should be resurrected. There is a very interesting meta conversation, not really a meta conversation, because Clea straight up asks Wong, you know, all these other heroes that die, do they stay dead? And Wong's like, no, they usually come back. And she's like, how? Usually on their own or through some other power. And she's like, okay, well, instead of waiting, you know, 6 months to a year for, you know, the dead heroes to return, I'm just going to speed up the process and bring Stephen Strange back now. And Wong's like, I'm not sure you should do that. So I really enjoyed the story in this. I think that there's something there. I'll be interested to see if Strange goes 12 issues or not. It might only go 6 or 8, depending on when they decide that it's time to have Stephen Strange return. But Strange number one, a lot of fun. Like the art. For the most part, there are some panels where faces look wonky when you're drawing them at different angles and perspectives. So that may be a little off-putting to people, especially in some of the close-ups. But overall, an enjoyable read. 4 slices of meatloaf out of 5. It's Strange number one from Marvel Comics on your comic book rack this week. But here at Major Spoilers, we have the power to peer beyond the veil and look ahead to what is coming in the weeks ahead. And I see scary vampire ladies, Rodrigo.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess they are pretty scary, but they're mostly naked.
Well, I mean, so, that's okay too.
Yeah. So, Draculina number 2, Draculina is a character, and I believe this comic is in continuity with Vampirella. So Draculina and Vampirella are both from the same planet.
They're sometimes siblings, actually.
Yeah, they're siblings. Draculina is like Vampirella is like the dark sheep of the family, or the black sheep of the family, because she doesn't want to just murder people, I guess. Draculina is the golden child because she does and is good at it and likes it. At least from what I've seen. Draculina number 2 finds... So right now, Draculina is doing like a Rick Jones Captain Marvel thing with an alternate version of herself. Like basically there is this like teenage girl who is like a version of her from another dimension. And they can essentially like flip each other so that one goes into the other dimension. Every time a mysterious, spooky candle is lit, like a specific candle. If you think it's like, oh, haha, there's a bad person, I will summon Draculina. No, it doesn't work that way. Draculina's evil. Like, she's bad news. And, the real standout new character, I don't know if this character has ever been there before, I've never seen him, is this rat who's actually like a little demon. But he's trying to basically keep Draculina's alternate self, like the teenage girl, safe. And try to prevent, you know, bad things from happening. There is a lot of like, basically, if you're coming into this, be ready for no one to hold your hand about anything. Like, Draculina's dad is in this, and I think Draculina's stepdad is also in this. And it's like, I had like a little bit of trouble like figuring out who all was who, because also I didn't read issue 1, which, you know, that's, you know, it's reasonable to not know what's happening if you didn't read the first issue. But I think I got it all sorted out. The art is very cool. I like the characters a lot. I like the character designs. There's a lot of cute panels with like a spooky rat, so I'm into that. This is not a book for kids. There is lots of blood and gore and like evil demon childbirth. So just be aware that, you know, you gotta have eaten 2 hours prior to reading this comic. Otherwise you'll get a Charlie horse. I'm gonna give it 3 slices of meatloaf. It's interesting. It's got a lot going on. It's always fun to sort of venture into comics that you don't read regularly and just watch them spin, because, you know, it's like, you know, back when I got into Marvel Comics, when I got into DC Comics, it's like I didn't know what was happening and the train was already moving, right? So it's like jump off or just don't, or jump on or just don't, right? Mm-hmm. So this is interesting. I'll give it 3 slices, and I'm looking forward to seeing what else comes out of it.
Very cool. Thank you for that, Rodrigo and Matthew. And dear listener, if you want even more reviews, point your browser to majorspoilers.com, where we have new comic book reviews going up every day of the week. And a big thank you to everyone who supports our show and all of the shows in the Major Spoilers Podcast Network. Big thanks this week going out to our newest gold level member, Matthew Abbott. Thank you so much for your support. If you're not already, you can become a Major Spoilers member by signing up at our Patreon page, patreon.com/Major Spoilers. All right, we're into the third act of the show already. Another crossover between publishers. This time it's Batman Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles from James Tynion and Freddie Williams II. Well, actually, it's James Tynion IV and Freddie Williams II.
Which means it's times eight.
Wow.
DC Comics and IDW Publishing did this in 2016, and I want to say there's been like three or four follow-up series.
Three total, yeah. There was a two, a three, and then a crossover between Batman the Animated Series and the Animated Turtles continuity.
Yeah. So there you go. There's a lot of stuff going on here. Rodrigo, what is going on in Batman Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Volume 1?
So, Batman, Dark Avenger of the Night, is investigating this thing where, like, a bunch of ninjas are breaking into scientific research firms and stealing stuff. And he's also investigating that some of those guys are maybe turtles. So that kind of sets him on to track down the Ninja Turtles, who, along with Shredder and a bunch of Foot Clan guys, I guess, unless he's been recruiting in Gotham, have come through a dimensional portal and find themselves in Gotham City. And the Ninja Turtles and Splinter, who also comes over, are on a clock in that if they don't get back to their dimension, like, the mutagen will, like, become inert and they'll just, like, turn into regular turtles. And then, you know, Batman fights them, and then they're like, oh, actually, we are all good guys. And then they team up to try to take Shredder down, get the turtles back into their own dimension, and try to not get anybody killed in the process, except maybe some Foot Clan guys.
Yeah, a lot of Foot Clan guys. And then don't forget Casey Jones. They figure out a way to open up a portal, and Casey Jones comes in to do some stuff. At first, Shredder teams up with Penguin, and then finds out that Penguin is not up to the task of being the person he thought he was. So he ends up teaming up with Ra's al Ghul and and his ninja clan. So, you know, ninjas. And then for the ultimate, somehow they create a mutagen or bring mutagens over from the TMNT world. Mm-hmm. And they go and infect all of the inmates at Arkham Asylum. And so everybody turns into a mutant. So Penguin turns into a penguin, and the Riddler turns into a fox, and Joker turns into some kind of snake monster. And it's a lot of punching and fighting until everything works out in the end. I got a question, though, because in the way that this is set up, they have to all get back through the portal or the mutagen wears off. Mm-hmm. And everyone is like, oh, Shredder, you will crush your rat spine under my boot. Wasn't Shredder a man or not? I'm sorry, Splinter, a man who touched a rat that turned him into Splinter?
No.
Go ahead.
But yes, Splinter actually has multiple origins. So in the movies, in the live action movies, and also in the Mirage comics, Splinter is literally a rat. In certain versions, he literally is Hamato Yoshi and is like turned into a rat man. And I think that is it. The animated series that started
the 80s animated series had that, because I still have in my head that frame of him of like a guy turning into a rat from the opening credits or whatever, from the opening song.
Yeah.
I was a little baby in the late 80s and early 90s. So that stuff is like seared into my brain.
Yeah. And I want to say that the Archie comics, the Archie Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle books had him as a human, but the IDW books, he's a rat again.
He's always been a rat. Okay. And because the IDW stuff is really the only stuff that matters, since that is what they're going off of. But I'm thinking
actually rebooted the origin too. Where
yeah, because that's what I thought. I thought in the old Eastman and Laird comics that he was a man that turned into a rat.
In the original comics, he was a rat that turned into a human rat hybrid.
Okay.
Apparently, initially, the mutagen thing would turn you into like a man-animal hybrid, but at one point they're like, no, it turns you into a hybrid of you and the last thing you touched.
Right? Yeah.
Which is why Yoshi, a man, touched the turtles and they became turtle men, and then Yoshi touched a rat and became a man rat.
Right.
And that explanation required him to be a human being, but he was originally not a human being.
I like that. I like that. That origin is pretty simplistic and pretty straightforward because I don't know, or maybe not, because how does Penguin turn into a penguin? How does the Riddler turn into a fox? How does Harley
Mr.
Quinn
turn into a polar bear?
I know, right? So I'm not sure how some of that stuff works out in the end, but somehow it all works out in the end. And everybody goes home happy, question mark?
Well, everybody goes home relatively satisfied. And there is a beautiful emotional moment between Raphael and Batman that sends me home with a smile on my face. So that's always nice. But
the whole part where Batman's like, let me tell you how my parents died. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know your parents died. I've been giving you this hard time this whole time. And now... Now I understand why you're a grim, gritty bat.
Yeah, and it's really great that it's Raphael, because Raphael is, you know, the rough edge turtle, and he's like, hey, bats, here's a mask for you. Your family may be dead, but if you come to our world, you have another family. And then they disappear forever until the sequel.
They drive off in their motorcycles and hot rod cars, because it's
their
family.
You know that Batman saw a teenager wearing a red mask... Mm-hmm. Who was like about to be destroyed by his own like impetuousness and anger, and was like, oh God, a second chance. Like a second
maybe.
Chance. I'm not going to screw it up this time.
That's right. That's right. And there were no crowbars to be found in this whole story.
And then, of course, you have to have some levity, right? Because Batman learns to eat pizza for the first time and thinks that it's really good. And, you know, he has a smile on his face. So for everybody that needs a smiling Batman, this has it in there. Mm-hmm.
And that's nice, yeah.
Honestly, I think that when you look at a crossover like this, this is pretty formulaic, right? I mean, it's like, here's everything that this needs to happen. We need to have Batman being grumpy. We need to have Raphael say that he's angry and wants to leave. We need pizzas.
Off.
We need Robin to show up. We need somebody to be hurt so that we have to do some medical attentions. We have to have Shredder teaming up with a bad guy. And then we have to have a bunch of people turn into mutants. And I think that's pretty formulaic and fits every kind of like checkmark that I think both publishers would want in this kind of crossover.
And that, I mean, that's kind of the thing. When you have this kind of crossover, this is not a time to be playing with the formula. This is not a time to, you know, to turn the tropes on their heads. This is literally, you know, this may be the only time, theoretically, even though I know there's three sequels rather. This may be the only time that you get to play with Batman and the Turtles at the same time. So you can't blame Tinian for going, okay, we need to make sure they both look awesome. We need to have the important bits and pieces of everything. So, you know, they keep introducing new characters to introduce new conflict. Casey shows up and people are like, oh, who's this cat? Then Robin shows up and tries to beat up Mikey. And by the way, the shots of Damian trying to beat up Mikey and Donatello while they're clearly trying not to slap this kid silly made me so happy. Yeah. Even if that's not what happened in the story, that's how I read it.
They actually do a really, really good job here, kind of piecemeal introducing characters, because they could have just gone all out, right? Here's four turtles, a rat, Batman, his kids, all the bad guys, but they're like, oh, well, they're basically like, don't worry, guys, Damian isn't in this book. He's off chasing the League of Shadows or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And then it turns out that Shredder... gets in contact with Ra's al Ghul and the, you know, and therefore the League of Assassins or whatever they're called. Mm-hmm. And so here comes Robin coming back and being like, hey, I've been tracking the League of Assassins and they got me back into this book. And everybody's like, great. And it's like, oh, now we're opening a portal. What's going to come out of it? It's a guy wearing a hockey mask. Great. You know, like just they do a good job of not or of trying not to overwhelm people because Ninja Turtle books, like if you're not familiar with the Ninja Turtles, and presumably this book is for not just for Batman and Ninja Turtle fans and Batman and Ninja Turtle fans, but also for people that maybe don't know one or the other, but are fans of one or the other.
Exactly.
So anytime you introduce the Ninja Turtles, there's four of them and their dad, right? So that's already a lot of characters. So this book actually does a very good job of like sort of piecemeal feeding you both universes slowly enough that it's digestible.
And I think, you know, we've looked at a lot of IDW crossovers before, and they kind of do that very well, right? Whether it's Star Trek meeting Planet of the Apes or Green Lanterns or whatever it may be, Transformers, they do a pretty good job of that each time they approach one of their crossovers. So I think that's maybe, I don't know, I look at this as not as far as sales, not as far as the importance of the comic in the comic book history. But I actually look at this as maybe a little bit more of a success than the last big DC crossover that we looked at with DC and Marvel crossover with Superman, Spider-Man, as far as, you know, because you step into that Superman, Spider-Man one, you kind of need to know who everybody is right off the bat. And this one doesn't really expect you to have any knowledge of either one of them.
Yeah. The Superman Spider-Man is kind of like the, you know, the stone carved example of what, you know, you see, hey, this is Walter White and he's painted on a cave wall. But I feel like at this point, they've got it down to a science to the point where they actually introduce the new characters and they power level everybody. We see how everybody ranks in those first three issues because we see Batman dealing with the boys, all four of them, which makes sense because all four of the boys are required to take on the Shredder. Then we see Splinter commenting on how good Batman is, but being good enough to get away clean and take the turtles with him. So we know that Splinter outranks Batman, but Batman may be a little better than the turtles. Then Shredder shows up. Shredder is a match for Batman. You know, it's something that's really kind of, it's almost beautifully mechanical the way it comes out.
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel as calculated as it might, but it's really, really well done.
It's respect. Yeah. It's respectful of its action figures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much so.
That I think and is all the biggest part of this.
And all of their accessories, including Batman's robot suit.
His turtle robot suit, thank you.
Yeah.
That, so, I think, is the hilarious part. Batman wearing a turtle armor.
What didn't you like about this, Rodrigo? Because there's certainly some moments where you could say, oh God, no, how could they do this? I'm out of here.
So I think the thing with crossovers is this does a good job of, in fact, checking all the boxes, which also makes it maybe a little bit predictable.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that it's bad. It's just that, like, ever since Raphael stormed out in 1989 in the movie, or whenever the movie came out, there is no time when Raphael doesn't storm out.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, so it's like when you look at it, it provides a story moment. It provides us with a meme on the internet that is now propagated far beyond what this comic itself has reached. It's not bad, but it's predictable, right? Mm-hmm. So you mutate all of Batman's villains and they're on panel for two pages and then they're all then they're all gone. It's just kind of like you need to have that screen, that like full page moment, and then it's over and we move on to, you know, to wrap up the story. So I at no point was I the only thing that was real surprising in this is that they like allowed Batman to be like a person a lot of the time. There's this like mandate that Batman can't smile or sit or be seen to be breathing, or, you know, he can't do the Vulcan salute or anything like that. and he definitely can't rap to Vanilla Ice. So
go, Batman, go, Batman, go.
Yeah, this comic does a good job of both showing us Batman's, you know, softer side and also earning it. Like, it does a good job of being like, well, it's like, you know who Batman has a soft spot for? A bunch of stupid combat trained kids. It makes sense.
Yeah, I think if I were to have one major complaint, I guess would be I would have just kept it with Ra's al Ghul and his clan and Shredder and his clan. And I guess I would have kind of removed the whole Arkham mutagen element of the story, because that did just feel like, okay, here we go. It's crazy time. But I understand in your formula, in the way that you need to play this out, you have to have people turning into animals.
Yes.
I would have also, personal opinion, just because I hate Damian, I could have done without him in this book. But I think that you have to bring everybody that you can into this. I mean, we have a whole thing with Gordon in here. We have a whole thing with, Robin in here. The only thing that was missing was maybe a Batgirl or a Nightwing showing up. That's fine. I think I'd have to go back and do some digging into the internet of things. But I'm going to bet that there were a large number of people that lost their poop when Batman is chewing pizza and smiling and saying, "Hey, this is pretty good." But I don't know. It didn't bother me, but I'm just know that there's going to be a whole lot of people that are like, "Batman does not eat pizza."
Well, those people are stupid.
I'm sure. But that's I thought it was fine. There's nothing really to hate except for maybe Damian. So Matthew, what about you?
I actually feel like this is incredibly successful as a crossover, but the limitations of the crossover, I think, are the predictability. And I feel like in a lot of ways, that's kind of the downfall of the crossover. You know, you say to yourself, hey, what would it be like if the 84 Transformers and the 73 Star Trek cartoon crossed over? And pretty much that's what you're going to get. So if you come into this with an expectation of, I know Batman and I know Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, you are not going to be in any way necessarily disappointed. But I think you're also not going to be surprised. For my money, I feel like the army of schmucks at the end, where all of the people from Arkham Asylum are kind of reduced to foot soldiers for the mm-hmm. Shredder and Ra's al Ghul. On the one hand, I feel like that's great and it makes sense and it gets a lot more characters, you know, on screen. You know, it gives us an excuse to go, hey, look at all these people that you might remember from, you know, the various Batman movies. But it does also kind of devalue their shtick a little bit, you know, because Bane is the ultimate terrible, awesome bad guy who once broke Batman in half.
What does he turn into? An elephant, that's right.
Yeah, he's
going to reference him or a rhinoceros. So, yeah.
And Batman takes him down in three panels. And that, I think, is the downside of this sort of thing, because you do have to have sort of a shorthand. You know, you can't have this full on everybody in the world. You can't have Harley Quinn on panel dealing with her issues with the Joker and the Joker being, I'm a Cobra now. But then the Penguin still hates the Joker at this point, and the Riddler hates them both. I mean, you can't necessarily do that, but you can have really satisfying moments where, you know, Batman nearly cleans Shredder's clock, but it's the Rat that gets in the final shot. You know, I appreciate the fact that they let Splinter not only take out the Shredder, but take him out with Harley Quinn's mallet. That's the moment that I'm like, okay, yes, this is really how you have to do this sort of thing, because, you know, DC's not going to let us nuke Batman. DC's not going to have any ongoing problems with the Foot Clan in Gotham, because, you know, they can't. You know, they've learned from Access. You can't keep things around after the crossover because you can't do anything with it. And for God's sake, you can't reprint it. But I feel like when you get to the end of this And Batman puts his arm around Damian, and they're like, yep, we're going to go do some father-son bonding together. And the last thing you see is Raphael's mask hanging there, reminding him, yes, I am Batman, but also I am a father. You know, that to me is a satisfying wrap-up. And then, of course, they ruin it immediately by going, the end for now, because we know there's a sequel coming. We all know there's
They name drop Kang so many times that it's just like, okay, he's coming in. So,
oh, sure. You got to have Kang. And that's when Batman goes to the Turtles world.
Yeah.
Where you get all that, you get like Kang and you get, you know, Complete Carnage and you get all of these idiots that the Turtles have fought. What's that guy's name with the leathery head?
And then Leatherface.
Swingnut.
Leatherhead. You get Slash the Evil Turtle.
Right.
You remember Slash. He's the one with the black suit who looks just like the others, except he's a snapping turtle. I mean, you can get your Bebop and your Rocksteady. Sure. That's the thing that you have. But I also feel like in some ways this is like when people say, I go to this Michael Bay Transformers movie and I don't expect it to be Citizen Kane. I just enjoy the popcorn cinema. That's fine. And I feel like you kind of have to bring a little bit of that story like this when you're selling these concepts together.
With any major crossover that we have, you can't expect the lasting repercussions. You can't expect it to stay in continuity. You really have to look at this is a separate continuity. This is nothing that will ever be referenced again in any of the main titles. And if it is, it's going to be an inside joke for those in the know. And I'm okay with that. I mean, I think that it's perfectly okay to do silly crossovers like this. And when I say silly, I don't mean that it's not worth your time or it's not fun. I just mean that it's silly. It's a giant turtle and Batman eating pizza together. It's a bunch of Alfred carrying a bunch of pizza boxes and having an issue with the turtles riding their skateboards in the mansion. You know, it's silly and it's fun and you don't have to take it seriously. And if you're looking for punching and smashing and beat 'em ups, this volume has it. So for me, it's kind of a big win. I mean, the art is fine. I don't really have a problem with the art. It just gets a little smudgy in places to me. But overall, I definitely say pick it up if you can get your hands on it. Rodrigo, final thoughts from you?
Yeah, definitely. It, like we said, it clicks all the boxes and in a much more satisfying way than I would say any of the Star Trek crossovers that we read.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, these properties are so much closer together that they're actually, it's like perfect. They're close enough together, but far enough apart that they're kind of able to just kind of vibrate sympathetically for a little bit, and you get a decent comic out of it. I would say, yeah, definitely. If you like the Ninja Turtles, pick this up.
Yep. Matthew, any other thoughts? I think you've already kind of shared them.
I think that there are two things you need to keep in mind about this crossover. One, Tinian is a good writer. Tinian puts things together. You have a decent artist, everything works. And two, the Turtles are a parody of Frank Miller's work, and Modern Batman is essentially a parody of Frank Miller's work, or at least a takeoff of Frank Miller's work on Legends of the Dark Knight. So this is peanut butter and jelly. Cheese and crackers. You know, take it all, read it, have fun, have a hamburger.
All right, that wraps it up for this issue. Thank you for listening. Currently, our show is entirely funded by you, our dear, 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 dear patrons. So thank you so much to those of you who are backing our show.
If you'd like to be one of the people backing the show, if you want to help support Major Spoilers, you can point your browser to patreon.com/majorspoilers. You can sign up for the silver membership today.
You can also support us by using the affiliate links you can find at majorspoilers.com.
We'll be back next week. What If with Scott Johnson? Why? Because we know that you love comics. We do too. And we will talk with you soon.
I've had the X-ray vision of Superman. I could save a few bucks and stand around and read through the covers of the comics on the stand. But although every other page would be backwards, I suppose, I could still read the evens and the odds. Well, I don't know. Guess I haven't thought this all the way through. Plus, as soon as the comic bookstore guy knew, they kicked my butt out on the corner. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. We'll be right back. out a better way. If I was hulking green or gray, I could just bust through that brick wall, take their comic books away. But then the little meat would deal with all the tanks and bombs and guns. Have you ever tried to read a series with all that going on? Guess I need to rethink this plan. How would I back and board my comics with such huge hands? Guess I already told ya what a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Start raving rich like a man of iron. Might not be surprised to find that I might actually have the heart cold to follow an entire storyline. But would I really even need to read up on all those escapades? I mean, who needs such distractions when your sister's such a babe? But the downside is such a beast. Being shot up in a fun, being the middle race with a king sign throwing soldier. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler, whoa, 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 whoa. What a major spoiler.
This podcast is copyright 2022 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.